Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 8:30 tonight. Judd Surratt has the pregame for the Blackhawks, who take on the San Jose Sharks tonight. A hot team, as we heard from Rob Martire. The Hot Sharks. Well, big night for commutes, so hopefully you're getting where you need to be in a safe and efficient manner. Tonight on the show, we bring you the latest on protests currently happening downtown and talk about last night's protests and the overwhelming support for the protesters that were arrested, including poet Malcolm London. Malcolm was charged with a felony for assaulting a police officer, a charge disputed by fellow protesters. Today, the charges were dismissed. We'll talk with his organization, Black Youth Project 100, about London's arrest and release. And we'll discuss the word on the street. Protests last night were pretty small in numbers, and today, as we just heard Eric say, there's only 100 people that are down at State and Lake. What's the overall feeling in Chicago? I mean, maybe it's not who's on the street and who's protesting, but what's the feel? And for that, we're going to talk to our regular commentator, Mario Smith, a little bit later in the hour. Also tonight, we're going to talk about what we're most thankful for. For me, it's Monica Ang and the Turkey Tips she's going to be bringing in tonight. She crowdsourced social media to give the best advice for tomorrow's big chore. We'll also talk about food waste, apparently a big thing in Chicago schools. And in music, hip-hop artist Tokyo is hitting Metro on Saturday night with a Save Money crew. That crew includes Vic Mensa, Chance the Rapper, among others. We'll talk with Tokyo about his big show and his Chicago identity. All that shoved into this hour and a half version of The Download. That's right, Blackhawks hockey coming your way at 8:30 pregame with Judd Surratt. Martire's here. Eric Sullivan's got the traffic times and the protest updates. That should just be his thing now. Here's the protest updates with Eric Sullivan. And, of course, production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download. Let's get right to it. Joining me now, Charles Preston. He's the communications co-chair for the Black Youth Project 100 here in Chicago. They were involved with last night's protest and, of course, the celebrations at the courthouse for the release of Malcolm London today. Charles, thanks for joining us.
Hey, good to be on.
So talk about the wave of emotion. Last night, at what point did you recognize and realize that Malcolm London was taken into police custody?
I was there seeing the SUV with him inside pulling off. And for me, it was a moment I was filled with rage because Malcolm did not do anything. He didn't commit a crime. Someone threw a smoke bomb. Someone in a Guy Fawkes mask threw a smoke bomb. And created like the perfect like opportunity for the police to isolate Malcolm and apprehend him and toss him in their vehicle.
From that point on, you know, for you and BYP 100, was the movement to the, you know, I saw it on Facebook and social media. We were on the air last night. Was the movement to call the police station, to call the representatives? What happened next after Malcolm was taken?
We had to love and support for our people. We all raced down to the station to be there for Malcolm and also to be there for our three other organizers that were arrested, Paige May, John A. Strong, and Troy Aline. They were arrested too early on, but as organizers, and more so, we treat each other as a family. The most imperative thing was to be there for them, so that's what we did.
For you today, obviously, you know, this morning there was a lot of outcry for Malcolm London to be for the charges to be dropped, and that happened. And there's some great I saw a Vine and some great video that was taken at the courthouse, a celebration that was outside. You were part of that. What did that feel like?
It's joyous. It's a time for joy in the not so peaceful time. We call it Black Joy. It's when Black folks celebrate just the opportunity for us to exist and for us to win in a country with law enforcement that is treating us inhumane and indecent, and where we constantly have to defend our narratives and defend who we are against the media, against law enforcement, against the state. And so I can say that most of the folks in that circle felt joy. And we were just happy that another black person was not thrown in jail.
There was a lot made of the fact that BYP 100 did not meet with the mayor beforehand. For you, do you believe that what happened to Malcolm London yesterday was retaliation for that public display of disrespect to the mayor?
I can't say definitely. I can't say definitely. I'm not sure. But what I do know is that leaders are targeted, and that's our history. And they've been targeted for surveillance. And we all know Malcolm is very charismatic. He's a leader in BYP. And so I can't say if that was the mayor's tactic, but I can say, you know, just based off of history, you know, leaders are isolated and often surveilled.
Let me ask you this. You know, it's fascinating because you, BYP 100 and others, We Charge Genocide, other groups have really become the face of Chicago's protest movement. And we've talked about it on this program before. You saw the city and the mayor's office and the superintendent and Cook County State's Attorney Anita Alvarez make moves in this case to try and stifle protest or what might be protest off of this video. Do you feel that any of the stuff that happened, the lead up, the charges, the meetings, everything that the mayor and the city did, do you feel that was because of the work that you've done in the past, because of the fact that the protest movement here in Chicago is credible, it is organized, and it is useful?
Yes, I think it is because Chicago doesn't have a culture of protest like cities like Oakland do. And it's the fact that I think we've been, for the most part, politicians and law enforcement have been complacent, and they're not used to citizens and people, Chicagoans, holding them accountable, you know, for their actions or inactions. And I think the work that BYP has done, the work that We Charge Genocide has done, is bring that inaction or those actions that are harmful to light. And then not only do we bring them to light, we act upon them. And so now just constant pressure that we're putting on a system, it forces them to change some things. For example, with the Say Her Name campaign, we were fighting for justice for Rekia Boyd's family, who was shot in 2012 by Officer Dante Servin. You know, we didn't get him off the force until this Laquan McDonald tape dropped in the year 2015, and which is totally and utterly ridiculous. But it was the fact that we even had to get that recommendation for him to get fired to McCarthy through our protest work. We had to take the boots to the ground in order for our voices to be heard. And we were at police board meetings every third Thursday of the month, lifting up Rekia's family, being there for her brother. That's the work we do. We're just trying to hold these officials and institutions accountable and demand more.
Let me ask you this, because Father Flager has called for a big protest on Black Friday on Michigan Avenue. What's your relationship like with the more mainstream protest movement, the Father Flagers and others? Is that something that BYP 100, We Charge Genocide, and other groups are involved in and come together to protest in unison with what Father Flager's asking for, or are you on your own?
It's hard to say. I haven't been in conversations around any action on Friday. I do, and this is me speaking personally. I can't speak on behalf of my whole entire organization on their feelings about, you know, Father Flager. Me personally, I have respected that Father Flager's been a voice for the Saint Sabina community and has been like the lonely voice in the Saint Sabina community. But there's also, I would like to see him push and confront the structural problems instead of our intercommunity violence, which is always a narrative that he uses. I would like to see him push for structural and hold the mayor accountable. I mean, if we have a mayor that did not listen to people hunger striking for more than a month, you know, and I think that we have a mayor that has closed half the city's mental health clinics, that has closed 50 schools in communities like the one community in St. Sabina that Flager's church is in. Mm-hmm. So I would just love to see, you know, that community continue to confront these politicians and law enforcement like they've been confronting our inter-community violence. But that's just me personally, not reflective of my entire organization, because we have, you know, many minds, and I can't speak for all.
Charles Preston is the communications co-chair for the Black Youth Project 100 here in Chicago. Charles, thanks for taking a few minutes out to talk to us tonight on the download.
Hey, thank you.
It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 8:30 tonight. Coming up, Judd's got the pregame at 8:30 and the puck drops at 9 o'clock in San Jose. The Sharks and the Hawks coming up. And coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, my good buddy Monica Ang, former Chicago Tribune reporter, works at Chicago Public Media now. She will be here with Turkey Tips. And we'll also talk about a continuing problem, which is kind of a good conversation to have the day before Thanksgiving about food waste, and specifically food waste in Chicago public schools. So we'll talk about that coming up at 8 o'clock. Right now, though, you know, it's interesting because I mentioned at the beginning of the show that, you know, the protests last night were pretty light if you really think about protests. I mean, there were 200, 300 people. Today, the protests that are downtown are 100 people, 150. There's some protests planned for Black Friday here on Michigan Avenue. We'll see how that turns out. But, you know, protests are not the best way to gauge reaction or gauge feeling. And that's when I introduce our regular commentator to the show, Mario Smith. He's a commentator, a poet, and also the host of Tales from the Service Entrance on WHPK. Mario, good to talk to you.
Hey, man. How are you, Justin? What's going on?
I'm good. Where are you celebrating Thanksgiving this year?
At the radio station. I'm actually doing my show tomorrow. And then I'll run home, grab something to eat, and then I have to work. It doesn't stop.
Oh, what a warm, charming day it sounds like, Mario.
I'm going to try to sit in the Bears and watch whatever happens there too.
So, you know, as I said earlier, I mean, it seems like the news has sort of globbed on to the idea that protests are really the mouthpiece for how people are feeling, and then they're putting associated numbers to it, saying there's 200 people, 300 people, 100 people. When you are you're from South Shore, we've talked a lot on this program about just the feel. What's your take on what you're hearing on the South Side?
First of all, I must commend Malcolm London and BYP 100 and Brittany and all those people who are walking down Michigan Avenue and letting people know how they feel. It doesn't matter how many people the number is. The point is, the Laquan McDonald videotape that was shown yesterday is abhorrent. Further demonstrates that Anita Alvarez, Rahm Emanuel, and Superintendent Gary McCarthy should all be investigated by the Justice Department, because what has happened, in essence, of holding that video back, They have created a situation in this city where they cannot be trusted. I guarantee you, and then I will answer your question, I guarantee you, had that videotape been shown prior to the mayoral election, Rahm Emanuel would not be mayor tonight.
That's a great
having
point,
said yeah. all of that, having said all of that, I feel that the best form of protest at this moment, aside from what the young people are doing, and I said it a couple of weeks ago on Twitter, young people are not singing Kumbaya. Young people are not addressing the be calm and be peaceful part of this. They're angry because they're the target demographic of the cops who have been killing people. When you are in a city like Chicago, or when you're in a city like New York, Eric Garner got choked out. That was on video. People saw that happen. Laquan McDonald got shot 16 times, and I'm imagining 7 or 8 of those shots happened when he was already dead. You cannot put a number on the anger that people have, the resolve that people have to make sure that Anita Alvarez is not reelected if she isn't removed from her position first. And you have to also remember something. This is not even the whole story, The video. If Officer Van Dyke is not convicted, I expect you will see even larger numbers of people and much angrier than what you're seeing now.
Well, you know, last night we kind of ended the program, Mario, with the idea that there are really two storylines in Chicago to investigate or to explore when it comes to our show. One is the idea of our government officials and cover-up. And you just mentioned that about, you know, it took 400 days and why did it take so long and whether or not this was used or not used to protect different interests. The other is about the relationship between the Chicago Police Department and the African-American community and other minority communities, but just about how there is a culture and how that culture is playing out when videos like this are seen, when actions like this are seen, and what happens in the day-to-day. And so both of those things are things that I think with you and I, we've talked about these in the past. But I feel like that's right. Don't you think those are the two areas that are this kind of represents?
Absolutely. Remember, prior to SAR phones and surveillance cameras and everybody being able to take a picture or what have you, Mark Clark and Fred Hampton Sr. were murdered by the Chicago police in their sleep. The right. Chicago police beat the hell out of many protesters at the Democratic National Convention. They are well-versed in getting down. They do not need a rhyme or a reason to do it. This videotape just proved it. And according to AlderTrack, there is another videotape that has been suppressed since last year that is going through the court system now. So my question to Anita Alvarez is, how is it that you're able, with the experience that you have under John Burge, and Mayor Richard Daley, former Mayor Daley, how is it that you're able to sleep at night knowing that there are men and women who do not trust you? She should be removed tonight.
Well, that's the call, yeah.
For her to have a job is abhorrent. This is ridiculous. Listen, let's say that this plays out and this officer is, or let's say this plays out and the conversation goes from videotape to non-conviction. What does anybody think is going to happen in this city? Because it won't just be young people then.
Well, let me ask
it
you this.
It won't just be black people then.
Mario, I'm going to wrap up because I got you next Friday. You're going to be in for a longer thing. We'll continue our chats that we do on a monthly basis. But what I'm interested in, and I hear this a lot, and I've heard it through texters who text in, and I saw it on the news yesterday. But there's this constant sort of, you know, and I don't know if it's right, and I want to get your take on it, this sort of like, where's the anger and where's the rage when we talk about Tyshawn Lee, when we talk about a nine-year-old being assassinated? Why doesn't the community march up on the Trump Tower when that's happening? What's your response when that continually gets put on social media, that continually gets put out to the protesters and the people that are upset about Laquan McDonald?
I believe the reason why we are having this reaction to this situation is because it involves a white police officer shooting and killing a black man. I believe that the reason why you don't see the same kind of reaction is because of the desensitizing of our community due to the many, many, many years of violence between black people. When Tyshawn Lee or Janila or Yummy Sandifer, or any of these children who have been murdered, it is an absolute horrific moment. And it is something that it takes a while to get over. I can't give you the answer as to why you don't see mass protests downtown when that happens. Mm-hmm. I would imagine if it was me organizing a protest, I would go directly to the fifth floor on LaSalle. I wouldn't waste any time. That would be where I would start and stop. And I've been saying that since all this has happened with Tyshawn and Janila and all these young people. I believe what you're also seeing is the beginning of a new thing in this city, or something that the city hasn't seen in a long time, and that's young people rising up for something that they feel they are definitely in the crosshairs of. I do hope that the deaths of these young people do fall into this plan that they have in terms of stating that we need help in our communities. We don't need handouts. We don't need kumbaya. We don't need be calm. We need assistance. They aren't providing it. We need to put people in place that can provide the assistance that we need, along with the community leaders who know what they're doing, to make this work. Otherwise, we are doomed to have more protests, and not just because a white cop killed a black man.
Yeah. Mario Smith is a poet and commentator. His show will be on tomorrow, Tales from the Service Entrance, WHPK, from 2 to 4, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I'll see you next week. I got you on the board for Friday. We can continue this conversation, take some calls, and continue to talk about the big issue here in Chicago around Laquan McDonald and relationship between police and minority communities. Mario, good to talk to you.
Thanks, man. Looking forward to next week.
Save money. We are army full of generals. Here to push the envelope and change what they think. It's my job to make them think and make music that they feel. So these songs make them sing like...
So I love it, I love it, love it, I love it, love it, I love it.
This is a download on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. This weekend, Chicago will be graced with the return of Tokyo, Chicago MC, who's back in town after opening up for Chance the Rapper on the Family Matters tour. Tokyo will be headlining at Metro with his crew Save Money, which will be opening. Tokyo is a Lane Tech grad. His album Wave Theory was released this summer. His crew is the hottest in hip-hop, and he's with me tonight on the download. Tokyo, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
You're back in town. This is kind of like a homecoming. I mean, the Family Matters tour was pretty much all fall, so it's nice to be back in Chicago, huh?
Yeah, I can't wait to get home, to be honest. I've been on the road for about 2 months now, just spreading the music, you know what I'm saying?
You know, the length of this tour, that Family Matters tour, really kicked off... like you said, 2 months ago. Is this the longest kind of tour that you've been involved in your young career?
Yeah. I went on a few tours, like, you know, but nothing this long, you know, this many dates. You know, it's been 2 months. I've been on a couple, like, 3-week run tours, but this is the first time we really did it all across America.
You will be performing at Metro on Saturday, and, you know, you'll be the Save Money crew that you've been with for years now will be opening for you. They've been in the news, the Save Money crew, because Vic Mensa, who's sort of the quote-unquote leader of Save Money, and also Chance and others who have been involved in the protest movement downtown. Vic was tweeting that he was right next to Malcolm London yesterday. Chance the Rapper throwing support. How political is the Save Money music, and where do you fit in with that?
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of like... Since we are like the representation of the youth, you know, it kind of feels like we have that duty to, you know, kind of just be involved, because, you know, everybody wants change, but, you know what I mean, like, it takes everybody actually becoming active on it, you know what I mean? And that's why my brother Malcolm, you know what I mean, like, you know, I mean, he makes us all so proud, because, you know, he makes music as well too, but outside of music, he's, you know, I mean, he's really out there pushing it. You know, it's an effort from everybody, you know?
You know, when I mentioned to, you know, this is on WGN Radio, and I mentioned Save Money Crew, explain what that is, because, you know, I know what the you know, in hip-hop what crews are, but for someone who's not familiar with Save Money, tell it how it came about and the sort of story behind it.
Well, Save Money is just basically a bunch of kids from Chicago. You know, we all met through... You know, I would say the CPS, or it's neighborhoods, but, you know, the CPS puts people from all around the city in different schools. You know, we met in grammar school, then went to high school, and really we were just the Chicago kids that was always outside chilling downtown, you know what I mean? Like, we were the youth. You know, we observed culture and I don't know, to me it's just like culture, like we keeping the culture alive from what we were brought up on, you know? And I also feel like our generation is like the bridging gap, because we was the kids that was really like outside still, you know, before all the technology took over, you know, like even at the end of our high school careers, like Twitter, Instagram still, you know, wasn't the monster it became, you know, like now everybody in grammar school got all those names, you know?
Yeah, right. That's hard to think about, yeah.
Yeah, we're like the bridging gap to keeping, you know, almost like real culture alive, you know, versus internet culture. You know what I mean?
Well, the whole Save Money crew, and I mentioned some of the names, Chance the Rapper, Vic Mensa, Tokyo. You know, you have been able to develop your own voice and your own audience. One thing that's amazing about the people I just mentioned, including yourself, is that there is no big, full, you know, studio or record label behind you guys. This is really between a relationship between you and your fans. And it's amazing how many downloads, how many hits, how everything about what you guys do is popular. Why do you think that is?
You know, like I said, I feel like we're just like the voices. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we're adults now, but I still very much feel like we're speaking for all the kids, you know, all the youth, you know what I mean? And I feel like the difference, you know, the fact that we all have, you know, all our individuals, like there's a bunch of us, you know what I mean? But we are all individuals and we all, you know, push each other. And it's great that it comes through the music where people are able to tell, can understand the individuality, you know, and, mm-hmm. and, you know, subscribe to it. It's not, you know, it's just popular because it's more towards, it's like a broader audience. That's why I feel like it reaches so many people and, you know, like it spreads so hard because, you know, it's coming from that place.
Let me ask you, because as you mentioned, individuality, when you're talking about these big names, individuality and identity are important to you. You know, your background, you're half Japanese, half Mexican. How important is it to have that cultural connection for you as a hip hop artist?
I think it's important. Like, my mother's from Mexico, my father's Japanese, from Chicago, you know, but I was raised in Chicago, you know, so I'm also Chicago, you know what I mean? And I feel like the culture that we were brought up in and I was raised in, you know, like it all defines me. It's like nobody's ever going to get the same mix of me, you know, like, you know, a Mexican Japanese person from Chicago with the experiences I have, or, you know, a Vic, you know what I mean? Black and white, or Chance, like to just grow up in Chicago. Everybody's experience is different, you know, but we all come together in it and people can relate to it, you know?
Let me ask you this. You know, you went to Lane Tech High School, and I also read that you were quarterback for Lane Tech, you know, and it goes to, you know, you grew up in Chicago, you lived the Chicago life, you went to high school. When did you realize that you had the musical bug where you were exposed to hip hop and left those other things behind to pursue a career in hip hop?
I have like songs up on MySpace when I was like in eighth grade. You know, I have homies that like hit rap when they were like older. I used to hang out with a bunch of older people and they used to have, there was like this rap group called like Money Up Front. So I've been like making music, but you know, I kind of like, you know, went sports and did it all, but really it was more so just me like really becoming an artist, you know, and sitting down and being like, this is what I want to make and I need to make it the best I can make it.
Let me ask you this, you know, as we wrap up, you know, for you playing Metro, this is a headliner for you. Save Money's opening for you, just coming off of the Chance tour, you were the opener. You've also sort of, you know, been a lesser known name to some of the names that have in the last year in hip hop have exploded, like Chance and Vic Mensa. What's it mean to you to be the headliner on this show, and what does it mean for your career?
We did Metro in May and we sold it out. That was right after Wave Theory dropped. So this one is like, you know, it's like a homecoming, and it's like kind of like the matured next level of Tokyo. You know, you about to just see, you know, the first show they seen what I did with Wave Theory, you know, and that was just the beginning, but now they're about to see like the vision fully coming together, you know. And this is just me coming back home. I've been on tour, you know what I mean? I love my city. I know my city loved me, so it's just a good feeling to come home and to know that, you know, like that's where the main core is at. You know what I mean? Like that's where it all started from. It's from Chicago, you know, going from Reggie's to Lincoln Hall to the Metro, selling out. You know what I mean? Like having saved money, we've been rocking shows since 2012, 2011. You know what I mean? And now it's the Metro and people are actually starting to understand the, you know, the vision and, you know, the brand and, you know, like the whole essence of what we do. You know, we are Chicago. It feels good to know that we are still putting on for our city.
This weekend, Tokyo will be at the Metro Saturday night. His crew, Save Money, is going to open for it. I'm sure there'll be plenty of surprises. Tokyo, thanks so much for taking some time to talk to us tonight on The Download.
Thank you so much, bro. I used to think that you never would.
It's The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With you till 8:30 tonight. That's when Judd Surratt's pregame takes over, and at 9 o'clock, the puck drops. San Jose Sharks, Chicago Blackhawks. Monica Ang, my old friend, works at the Chicago Tribune, and now over at WBEZ, is in studio with me. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
You know, I'm so excited to have you because we've done this as almost like a tradition to talk about turkey.
Yeah.
For the last couple of years.
Didn't feel like Thanksgiving without doing it.
So, you know, what I liked, and I saw this happening, I was monitoring you just like the old days of monitoring your Facebook, and you had crowdsourced turkey tips for tomorrow because, you know, that's something that we found out through call-in, through conversations before that, you know, it can go a lot of different ways.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, now it's almost fighting words to say, oh, well, I'm gonna brine. Well, you still brine? I dry brine. I dry cure. Or, you know, oh, it's so last year to brine it. No, you've got to sous vide it. Oh, no, all the people there putting it in the crock pot and braising it. You're so dumb to have a whole turkey. So it's really become divisive. And don't even get me started on deep frying.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. 312-981-7200. You can text or you can call in. And I'm going to give away the Lightkeeper Pro, Pete. I know you're excited about this. This is good. It's your complete tool for repairing holiday light sets. You can watch the video at lightkeeperpro.com. And I've got one to give away for the person who gives us the best and creative way they are handling their turkey tomorrow. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
Does that sound good?
I'd like to win that.
No, you're not going to win it. 312-981-7200. Okay, so what did you get? I mean, usually, I feel like I come from a vegetarian family. Mm. And so there's always this fight.
Who gets the tofurkey first?
Yeah, but what my mom does, which is kind of annoying, is that she will make a turkey for me.
Justin's turkey.
Yeah. And so I'll be like, she'll be like, oh, here's the turkey. And I'm like, I can eat the vegetarian. I can eat the tofurkey too. I don't need it just because I eat meat.
Yeah.
But that's my thing. But for you, let's talk about what you found out, the turkey tips, because there is, what's the hot thing this year?
Well, the hot thing this year, I would say, is dry brining or dry curing, which is to take your turkey, and boy, you don't have much time if you haven't done it yet, and 2 days before or 1 day before, just covering it in sort of salt, pepper, and sugar. And then that kind of pulls out, it pulls in the salt flavor and then pulls out the juice and then it goes back in again. So it's juicy, you get a crispy skin, you get a nice salty flavor. People really prefer it over the wet brining, which was really hot in the 1990s, where you mix salt, sugar, and herbs in water and then you put it in a plastic bag in a bucket. People really seem to like this. A couple of years ago, all the chefs were saying, you're crazy if you don't sous vide it. But who has this sous vide machine? It's basically a machine that keeps the water at a certain temperature and you cook it for very, very long. I'm sorry, it's too expensive. It's too chefy.
Too chefy.
Yeah. You know, chefs, they've got the sous vide machine. And it does taste great. Louisa Chu and I made it that way, but it's too much work. I'm saying dry brine. Last year, spatchcock. Everybody wanted to spatchcock it. That's where you cut right through the back and you flatten it like a brick chicken. And that actually worked out for us well last year.
I like too chefy.
Yeah.
We should do the too chefy awards.
Oh, I'll
people
come
can
back.
Call up and you'll be like, that's too chefy. Next. That could be your new thing. That could be like your catchphrase.
I could do like, tell me what's the worst too chefy thing that you've ever.
You'd be like Emeril Lagasse. You'd be like, too chefy.
You have a book. I'd be like Donald Trump. You're fired. But this year, don't tell anybody.
Okay.
We're going to do this little trick on our guests. We got one Aldi turkey, and my partner is tonight picking up another turkey from Butcher and Larder. Let's just say they are very different prices. So we've got this really expensive, sustainable turkey, and then we've got the least sustainable turkey possible.
And you're just going to put them both out?
Right, and say, which one tastes better? Do not tell my guests. It's just between you and me.
And the 50,000 watt blowtorch here. What do you think's going to happen? Have you had the Aldi turkey before?
I have not. This is our first year, and it's sort of an experiment. I mean, and you know, obviously there are things beyond flavor. So even if both of people say that both flavors are the same, you know, you want something that's been raised properly, something, you know, ideally a turkey, turkeys that can mate naturally rather than artificial insemination. You want turkeys that have lived on pasture, that have, you know, been fed properly. So not everything's equal there, but I am going to see what you get for the different prices.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Kathleen. Kathleen, welcome to the download. Tell us how you prepare your turkey.
Well, this year I'm having quite a group. We're having about 70. We're having both sides of the families coming
70,
over.
70?
Yeah. And my sister-in-law is making two turkeys. One is going to be wrapped in bacon, and the other one, she saw a picture online. You put lemons in the turkey breast, so it looks like the turkey has boobs.
Interesting.
Too chefy.
Yes. It is so funny. The picture is hysterical. I'm like, you got to make this turkey. I don't know. Lemons, I don't know. I was like, well, see if you could do a little research to what it's going to taste like.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of putting lemons in the cavity along with some garlic and some herbs, but in the boob parts, interesting.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, Kathleen.
Let me see if I could send you guys a picture.
Yeah, please do. Just text it to us and stay on the line because I want to give you one of the Lightkeeper Pros. Oh, I cut her off there, but she's on hold. She's going to get one of those. I got three to give away. So let's go to Elizabeth. Elizabeth, welcome to the download.
Hi.
What's your turkey tip?
Hi. Besides brining the turkey, what we do is we take parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, and we chop it all up, and we put it in softened butter, and we put that all up under the skin of the turkey.
So and then jam we jam the butter in between the skin and the breast.
Wipe our hands all off on the outside, too, and it makes it really, really juicy, and it flavors your gravy when you make your gravy and stuff.
Oh, love it.
That's interesting.
That is definitely too chefy. All right, Elizabeth, hold on. I'm going to give you one of these Lightkeeper Pros. Okay. Stay on the line, okay?
All right, thanks.
I keep cutting people. They want to say thank you, and I'm like, no, you don't have time. We don't have time. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to continue the conversation, 312-981-7200. For people who are listening to this now are like, you know what? I'm going to do that. Is it too late to do that? I mean, how long does it take to cook a turkey on Thanksgiving?
Oh, you're only going to need a few hours, but the brining and the curing can take longer. I mean, I guess if you get your turkey in the brine right now, you'll probably be okay depending on what time you put the bird in the oven tomorrow.
Right now, people are running around and getting the brine sheets out or whatever you brine with.
But you can get that butter and then slide it between the skin and the breasts, you know, pretty quickly.
All right. Monica Ang in studio with me. We're talking turkey. When we come back, we'll talk about another food issue, food waste, which is tends to be an issue with Chicago Public Schools. We'll talk more with Monica and take your calls, 312-981-7200. It's a download. Stay with us. A little classic music for you there, Monica.
Wow, it sounds very public radio-ish.
Too chefy! Monica Ang, formerly of Chicago Tribune, now with Chicago Public Radio. We're talking about turkey tips, 312-981-7200. We got a couple more minutes before the Blackhawks pregame begins. Judd Surratt, the puck drops at 9. But before we do that, you know, you had a story just this last week about food waste, and that's a big part of Thanksgiving. I was just talking about my mom makes a whole turkey for me that I feel like I try to chow through it as fast as I can the next couple of days, and I ought to always feel like I'm throwing stuff out. But your story was more about how it happens frequently and maybe it doesn't have to in Chicago Public Schools.
Yeah, you've always had a lot of food waste in schools, as I've covered this for the last 10 years. It's always just been breaking my heart to watch all the apples and pears and oranges just going straight in the garbage, because in some schools, they won't even let the kids take them out of the lunchroom. They say that they're going to attract rats. And so sometimes I come home with a backpack full of apples and I said, kids, I'm making a pie because I was in a lunchroom today. But this one is part of a new federal program where in districts with high, low income percentages, they've said, let's just make it all free. Let's just end this whole thing where you turn in the free and reduced form and they say, OK, this is how many kids are free and this is how many reduced. This is how many are paid. I said, end that. No more forms. Everybody gets it free. OK, maybe that's OK.
OK, right.
But it's got to be the whole meal. So little Johnny in Beverly, who goes to school with his sack lunch and says, I'd like a cold milk to wash that down. He's told, take the whole thing, Johnny.
Ah.
And they're like, what do you mean? I've already got a lunch. Take the whole thing.
So make him take the whole thing, yeah.
We get $3.15 if you take the whole thing. Just take the whole thing and throw it away. Take your milk. And so little Johnny goes home to mom and says, Mom, they made me take a whole thing. And I didn't mean to throw it away, but I did. Mom is furious. The moms take over the LSC meeting at this school in Beverly, and they say, what the heck is going on? Why are you telling my kids to throw this away? Monica walks in. Monica interviews the parents. Monica asks the USDA, are you really making a policy where the school can, where the district and Aramark can make all this extra money if they push kids to take food they're not going to eat? Well, yeah, because it should be a complete meal. But
yeah, they're not taking into account that maybe they just want one part of it.
Right. And so like, well, okay, if the kid wants it, he can bring money in his pocket every day. You've got a young child. How often do they remember to bring the money in the pocket?
No, that's not a good...
Yeah. And if a stern lunch lady says, take the whole thing, they're like, okay, I will.
Right.
So the mothers are furious. People who look at food waste are furious. The USDA says this is the policy and we just have to enforce it. Congress would have to change it. So so one of the women I talked to for this, she's a professor of economics at Northwestern and she's at the Brookings Institution this year. She said, I know that folks in Congress would want to stop this. So I basically exposed it. I said, what's happening? I said, why they're doing it. And so maybe we'll have a change in the policy. It's unclear, but at this point, there's tons of food waste.
That's fascinating. You can find it at WBEC.org. The story was last week. And that is that, again, when the government regulates, you know, good eating and good food and what's the casualty? And the casualty in this case, of course, is the fact that stuff is just getting thrown away.
Right. And kids are learning, you know, at a time when kids are doing food drives for the needy, they're also being told to throw away all this food. And it's just dollar signs in people's eyes. You know, Aramark's like, we could get big bucks if we just get you to take this and throw it away. And so the government is basically tempting the companies and the district to do this because there's such a financial payoff.
Ah, wow. That's a good story, Monica.
Thank you.
And a string of good stories. Monica Eng, formerly of the Chicago Tribune, now with Chicago Public Radio. You can find that story at WBEC.org. Happy Thanksgiving.
To you, too.
Thank you for coming in. And big plans tomorrow?
Big, cooking for 20.
Yeah, I'm
heading home tonight to cook
two
more.
Turkeys.
Two turkeys.
The high and the low. Two chefy. And
it's
that's
going
it.
To be very chefy.